This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputing without side effects.
And Mazel Tov, it's a new supercomputer.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 3rd, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. I've been sitting around watching the Olympics, and we've got one story coming up with a bit of an international flavor. But before we do that, you spoke recently with Jeremy Smith, who's the director of the Center for Molecular Biophysics at Oak Ridge, and wrote a nice story about some new developments in HPC and pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing research in this domain for a while. This particular part of Oak Ridge research has to do with drug discovery, molecular modeling in general. And the story he talked to me about was a little different from the other drug discovery stories that we typically hear about, where you're sort of matching, you know, a particular drug against a particular disease. The thing they're working on, the thing they're moving towards, is actually something a little more complete, where they basically match drugs against every protein in the human body. Now, you know, I guess we should sort of backtrack and say the way it works usually is you'll match some drug against some target protein that's causing a disease of some sort.
And you see how well the drug interacts with the protein. Right. Ideally, how well it interacts with the protein in some solution or fluid, like water or blood.
Right. It has to bind to that protein and basically inactivate it to disable the effect of that protein, which is causing the disease. So whether it's an Alzheimer's protein or some other type of protein that's causing the disease, that's basically how drugs work. It's a small molecule that fits into a very large molecule, the protein, and basically renders it inert.
Right. You're looking for keys that will fit into particular locks.
Right. Right. And that works. I mean, there's different ways to do that, but you can do it virtually, and that's what people have been doing at HPC inside a computer. You'll do the model of how this happens because you know the configuration of the protein and you know the configuration of the drug, and you can sort of just do this as a computational experiment.
One of the things they're talking about here, though, is reducing what's known as toxicity, which has to do with essentially side effects. This is the problem when your key that you made fits more than one lock, right?
Right, right. So you've got other proteins in the human body. Not all of them are causing diseases. You've got something on the order of 1,000 different types of proteins, and most of them are doing good things. You know, your blood cells have lots of proteins, and you know everything has proteins basically. And obviously, these are very important components of your system. So you don't want to inactivate those good proteins. But like you said, some of these drugs aren't very specific, so they'll fit into the disease protein molecule, but they'll fit into the good ones too. So what this research is sort of moving towards is being able to take a drug or a lot of drugs and match them against all the proteins in the human body. The problem is this is computationally expensive to do, even for one drug. You know, we've heard these stories of how long it takes. I mean, even for like 50,000 cores, if you want to test, you know, something millions of compounds, it'll take you a few hours or a day to do that one thing, just to test against the disease protein. If you have 1,000 proteins, you've got 1,000 times the problem. So basically, you need something 1,000 times more than a top supercomputer, which is a petascale computer. Today, you need an exascale computer.
Yeah, one of the cleverer things I heard anyone say at an HPC presentation was from one of the pharmaceutical companies talking about exactly this problem, where he said there's this great marketing term in medicine and in drug discovery called side effects, which we use to mean the important thing is that there really is no such thing as a side effect, right? The drug just has effects.
Right.
We use the term side effect for, you know, the unintended consequences, but the drug doesn't know which protein it was supposed to interact with.
Right, right. But it's obviously it's important. I mean, if you've ever heard a drug commercial, they talk about the effect of the drug for about 5 seconds, and they talk about the side effects for about right. the other 55 seconds of the commercial. So
this is all the other things that the drug does or might do. And, you know, understanding these toxicity questions is important for unlocking things like, you know, how often in the side effects do you talk about with this drug can't be even handled by women who are pregnant or might become pregnant. And, you know, it's difficult to get pregnant women to sign up for trials where it's like, you know, here, rub this on and see what kind of birth defects it causes. You know, it's difficult to run those kinds of tests, right? It's not a physical test that you want to play around with. So unless you can design drugs with perfect specificity so that you know it's not going to interact with a fetus, then you're going to have those warnings, and appropriately so.
Yeah, and even over and above the difficulties of doing some of these tests is just the expense. I mean, most of the expensive drug development is on these clinical trials towards the latter half of the drug development cycle. This is where they're spending at least two-thirds. The drug companies are spending at least two-thirds of the money, and that's a lot because they're spending basically a billion plus per drug to get it from conception to market. So there's a lot of money at stake here. And the idea, if you could determine most of the toxicity issues beforehand, you wouldn't waste that effort at the end when you find out during the clinical trial that, oh yes, it reacts this way and it's toxic in this way. You could screen out, let's say, 90% of those problems. You'd save these companies a lot of money. So it's a way not just for safety, but to actually make drugs more to get more of them onto the market and make the right. process more economical for drug companies and for consumers.
Yeah, to get drugs to market faster. Really, what you're talking about is not so much the discovery of the target drug itself, but finding the one out of 10,000 that really is going to be the drug that comes to market by getting rid of the other 9,999 faster and easier.
Right. As Jeremy Smith said, I think in a few places, says you want them to fail early and fail fast, or fail right. cheap and fail fast. Fail cheap from the point of view of the drug company. So, yeah, the idea is to do more of this in the virtual computing realm and less in the clinical realm. I mean, the drug companies spend somewhere on the order of like $50 billion a year doing this, and they haven't, you know, their track record is not that great. I mean, they turn out maybe a couple dozen drugs a year for every year. And that's, you know, that's not that much. I mean, considering they're spending that much money, basically five times what we spend on HPC around the world, drug companies are spending on R&D for these drugs. And, you know, the output is pretty small.
Yeah, well, but they're life-saving things. I mean, you know, the drug companies are going to feel like they're doing good work here, and this is a direction that's been talked about for a while. The genomics being what it is, it took off with the Human Genome Project, but you can really go beyond genomics to complete proteomics modeling or mapping proteins. You can take that, you know, to structuromics and beyond that, the whole organisms. This is the path, the direction that we're on with HPC and pharmaceuticals. I think they're on that train.
Yeah. One odd thing that I really wasn't aware of when I was talking to Jeremy about this is the drug companies themselves seem to do very little HPC themselves for drug discovery. They do a lot of combinatorial chemistry, which is physical chemistry, is high throughput in its own sense, to sort of get the candidate drugs to begin with. And we've seen all these stories recently and or over the past several years about people doing, the companies actually doing specific HPC applications for specific types of drugs, especially in the cloud. They seem to be very interested in that. This is an application that can work very well in a loosely coupled cloud. But if you look at the aggregate work that's being done, it seems like more of this drug discovery in the HPC realm is being done at national labs and universities than at the companies themselves. They don't seem to have maybe even the expertise in HPC, and they certainly don't have the wherewithal to buy a petascale computer. They don't want to do that, although, you know, with a $50 billion investment per year, maybe they would consider that, but they don't seem to have the culture to buy into it at that level. They are.
Now, see, there I'm going to disagree with you, Michael. I think that they're bought into HPC and they're doing more than you give them credit for. Now, maybe what Jeremy's saying is they don't have petascale systems like they have at Oak Ridge, and that's certainly true. But if you're going into Pfizer or Bristol Myers Squibb or Boehringer Ingelheim or any of them, they're doing HPC not only for computational chemistry, biology. They're doing pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamics or PKPD. They're doing all of these things, maybe not at the level of scale of a national lab, but they're in.
Yeah, I mean, from my conversation with him, he seemed to indicate that there wasn't nearly as much. Like, if you had to compare the amount of research in this realm going on at the national labs and government, even outside the petascale machines, versus what was going on inside these companies, it was you know, unproportionately balanced for the nonprofit organizations. And I'm sure, yeah, they do have these clusters. They're doing, I think, specific types of research on certain molecules and certain things. But I think as a product development workflow, it doesn't seem like it's well integrated into that as far as developing this and getting it to market.
I'll disagree with you again. We actually did a study once on best practices in HPC in the pharmaceutical industry. It is part of their workflow. They're working on getting it consolidated so it's not independent clusters sitting all over different parts of the country where the chemistry guy has his cluster and the biology guy has his cluster. They're trying to centralize it. There is some that was internal grids that would go through the company. I think they are looking at cloud. But more important to what Jeremy was talking about is certainly there are plenty of independent research labs where rather than doing something in-house, a pharmaceutical company will pay to have the research done elsewhere. That doesn't mean that the pharmaceutical company isn't invested in having it done. If they're paying an independent research house to do it and that's some not-for-profit, then fine. You know, whether it's in-house or not, I think is irrelevant.
Yeah, to a certain extent, that's right. Because I mean, even as I was researching this particular story, there are a lot of collaborations between the nonprofits and the companies. I mean, basically, they're working together. I mean, like Oak Ridge is working with Georgetown Medical Center, I think, and usually it's an arrangement like that, especially where you have access to that type of compute power that you can't get in-house. So I think that's probably the model that we'll see. And yeah, as far as the amount, I mean, you've done this study. It's hard to tell. Sometimes the companies themselves are not that public about their infrastructure and what they're doing. So there's not a whole lot of stories out there. So sometimes it's kind of hard to tell. But I did really get the impression that the most serious research using HPC is being done at the nonprofit level.
Well, okay, coming back to Jeremy's point, he's got a petascale supercomputer at Oak Ridge.
Yes, he does.
You know, there aren't that many of those. They certainly aren't within the pharmaceutical company. So to the extent that you get these next level problems where you have something that is petascale, this biomolecular stuff can be done at arbitrary levels of complexity. We're not modeling interactions at the human body level yet, right? And, you know, so... And as we go up through, petascale, exascale, and all of the obscure prefixes that follow, there will always be more complicated problems, and the research labs will probably have larger computers than the pharmaceuticals do. I just objected to the notion that the pharmaceutical companies themselves aren't doing or sponsoring real HPC.
You know, your point about the difference between the petascale and the smaller clusters in the at these firms is well taken. I know at one point we talked about how long it would take for like some of the research they do at these companies with the the 100 node and below clusters. It takes like a few weeks to do even a simple test, not toxicity test, just to test like a million compounds against one target protein, and that's the thing that when you get a petascale computer, you can actually cut that down to a day or even hours. So, yeah, there is that difference always. But yeah, in the future, it'll be interesting to see how these firms actually, sort of ramp up this technology and get some use cases under their belt. I think there's always going to be this collaboration, but I'm still sort of not convinced on how invested they are and how invested they're going to be in this just because of sort of the expense of what they need to get to.
It's an important vertical market. It's one that we'll keep seeing develop as it goes. Now, we've been speaking of smaller clusters in the realm of big HPC, and you had another story this week about a new supercomputer, although a smallish one, going into Israel.
Yeah, this one wouldn't normally even make the news, probably in the U.S. and a lot of places. Probably, they didn't actually say how much performance that it was, you know, peak or Linpack or anything like that, but it was 88 nodes. Dual core, so you think it's something probably on the order of 20 teraflops, which is way below even the top 500 realm. But for Israel, this is a fairly big system. They said it's their biggest civilian cluster in the country, which sort of struck me as odd. I'm thinking Israel's, you know, an advanced technical economy. I mean, they've got a lot of IT companies there. They invest in R&D quite a bit. In fact, they're at the top of the list. They invest over 4% of their GDP on R&D, and yet their HPC footprint is really small. I mean, they've got three systems on the top 500, none of which look like they're research systems. They're just systems somebody ran Limpac on. This cluster, which is not a top 500 system, is going to be a research system for general research and different science realms, but it's a very small one. It's like, you know, 20 teraflops.
Well, you're right that Israel has a big tech footprint, including in HPC. If you look on the supply side, Mellanox probably being the best example of a company based in Israel with a lot of R&D that's in Israel, although there are some others. But, you know, with regards to top 500 and actual HPC installations, I wonder if there's some that we're not seeing. Top 500 is not a perfect map of all the large systems in the world.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. I mean, Israel certainly has defense and security realm, and yeah, I would be surprised as a
key U.S. defense ally also.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if there were some larger systems out there that are just not public and not making the list. Although, if it was an open science type of computer, it would make the list. So that's the thing that's really odd. There's no open science or science or research HPC systems that appear on the list, so I'm assuming they're not there, and that is sort of unusual. And we just talked about Australia last week having all these new systems and investing into petaflop systems within the next year or two. Israel's made no noise about that. I mean, their GDP is, their economy is maybe half the size of Australia's, but still, it just seems so underrepresented.
Well, it does get lumped into, you know, the EMEA geography group, the Europe, Middle East, and Africa, which means that when we're looking within a region, that it's a, you know, smaller HPC footprint than, you know, the major Western European countries that tend to dominate that list. But, you know, we do see HPC in the Middle East, and we do see it growing in some sense. But a lot of the defense-oriented stuff is hidden because that's a turbulent area right now.
Right. I mean, I think we've talked about Saudi Arabia. CAL certainly is the big facility that has, I think, the largest supercomputing footprint there now, then that's certainly research. But and it is growing. We're seeing a lot, of course, there's a lot of oil and gas clusters spread throughout some of these countries. But research HPC is a little scarcer. But I got to admit, I was a little surprised that Israel did not have a bigger HPC research footprint than they do. And I'm not sure what their plans are. I never hear them really talking about their aspirations in this area at the level of the federal government or even locally for some of these technology organizations.
Well, you know, I think if you compare this to other, I mean, look at India, for example, is another country where they've got a very heavy tech investment. It's a much larger country than Israel, but you don't see a whole lot of HPC coming out of India either.
Right,
the HPC usage, that is. I mean, you got computational research labs, I guess, and a few others, and you got Wipro out there. But but if you look at how much HPC there is relative to how much tech, I would make a bigger case for India than you're making for Israel.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you look at Israel; it's about four times the economy in size of Israel, but they've got five systems, I think, on the top 500, and those are science oriented research systems of various scope. And some of them are further, much further up the list than any of the non-commercial Israeli systems. So there is some footprint. It's a bigger economy, obviously, as we said, but there is at least noise being made at the federal level that they think this is important, and they are, at least for a while, they seem to be investing in it more heavily. I think they've taken a year or two off. They've got other things they're investing in. I mean, the odd thing there is they invest, as a country, India invests very little in R&D. It's like below 1% as compared to Israel, over 4%, and I think the U.S. is somewhere in between there. It's like 3.5%. So they don't actually put much of their government spending in R&D, and yet, you know, they still have some HPC. I don't know if that's...
India actually being heavily criticized right at the moment with regards to their national infrastructure and their power outages this week. So it's actually quite topical. Would you put more money into HPC or would you put it into an electricity grid now?
Well, right now they're going to put it in the electricity grid, but sure, they have infrastructure problems as well, and they certainly need to invest in that. And they've got a lot of other things they need to invest in. But, I mean, I would say if I just compared Israel and India, I would say at least India seems a little more committed to having an HPC footprint than Israel at this point, at least, even proportionally.
My point is, don't count the Israelis out. I think they're probably, again, doing more than you're giving them credit for. So here is one small system going into Israel. Whether you're seeing them on the top 500 list or not, I would bet there's more HPC going on in Israel than you're implying.
Well, if any of our listeners out there know about it, I'd sure love to hear about it because, again, this is one of the countries that there should be some research going on. It's something that I'd be interested to see if there were projects that were using HPC there. So if you hear about it, let us know. Drop me a note.
Excellent. Well, we'll see what kind of mail we get back after this podcast.
All right. Well, I think that's all we'll talk about for this week. We're going into the summer season, midsummer now, obviously. News is a little slower, but I know there's a couple of interesting items coming up over the next couple of weeks that we'll be talking about.
Excellent, Michael. Looking forward to it.
All right.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.